show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Well, that sounds like us. That's right. I guess it's time. I'm going to get the engines started, get the motors revved up, right? Yeah, time for another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. I'm Johnny Dean, our main brain trust advisor and fact checker in chief. Boy, I got to be careful when I say that, don't I? I'm going to say this again. Our main brain trust advisor and our fact checker in chief. Whew! Professor Rick Plum. That's right. He's back here in studio with more money information, more answers to the questions that are most important to you. We are standing by. We're ready to help you out. Got a lot of things to talk about this hour, and we're going to be taking your phone calls, as we usually do on this show, certainly. That means you need to take part in the show, all right? You got to do your part by giving us a call. Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Spells out PLANNER. We do take your phone calls first, so grab your phone, give us a call. As for your emails, you can send your questions and comments here to us at wealthed.com. That's, of course, our website at the Find Your Answer link. Now, I did say the Brain Trust is here in the form of Professor Rick Plum, Certified Financial Planner. We're standing by for you. We can do so both on and off the air. You should keep in mind that the advisors at Lucia Capital Group can help you out with your own individual situation. If you want a personalized buckets plan, a strategy, you can get in touch with the professor or any of the nationwide advisors at Lucia Capital Group at 800-644-1150. They'll set you up with your own bucket strategy. They've got an entire network of brain trust advisors who are ready to advise you on just about any situation at all. The number off the air again, 800-644-1150. Our number on the air once again, in case you missed it the first three times, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. I just say that because we do have, every line is open right now. You know, I mean, it seems quiet. I don't know why. So just, you know, give us a call. Actually, one of the reasons to give us a call is because we didn't get to finish some of the stuff that we talked about last hour. And I know there's interest in it because we had at least three capital gains tax questions last hour. And one of them toward the end of the hour had to do with what we were talking about with regard to basis. Now, Professor Plum, I want to sort of clear up what this means when we talk about basis. You know, sometimes we throw terms out, especially when talking about things like capital gains. We say, well, you know, if you inherit this particular asset, guess what? You get a step up in basis.
Right, resetting of it sometimes is a step down.
Well, that's true, but let's just say that, you know, for the most part, you do. First, so let's explain for folks what we mean when we're talking about basis.
Well, basis is a tax term, and it is the term used to define the starting point for determining gain or loss. Generally, it's what you paid for something. So if I buy a stock for $10 a share and there's no dividend reinvested and I don't add any money to it at any other time, that's my basis, $10. If I sell it later at 12, I have a $2 gain. If I sell it later at 7, I have a $3 loss. My basis is what I paid for it. If I buy a piece of real estate, raw land for $100,000, that's my starting point for determining gain or loss. Now, if I buy that raw land and I pay to build a garage or, you know, put a shed up or something so that I improve it any way, shape, or form, that adds to my basis because I improved the property. So now I paid $100,000 for it and I put $50,000 into this workshop or something to, you know, store things so that I can go camping or whatever out there. Now my basis for determining gain or loss is $150,000. And so if I sell it later on for $180,000, $30,000 gain. If I sell it for $120,000, it's a $20,000 or $30,000 loss. That's mm-hmm. my starting point. Now, where people get confused about basis is that every time I add to it, it adds to my basis.
When you say add to the what?
If I'm adding to my investment, maybe I buy a mutual fund and I put $1,000 in. And then each month I'm putting in $100 a month to the investment. Through, you know, take it out of my bank account, put it in. I just do it automatically. I don't even remember doing it. It just happens automatically. Every time I invest new monies that I've already paid taxes on, that's an increase to my basis. But where people really, and that's somewhat easy to maintain. I mean, you say, okay, I put $1,000 to begin with. I'm putting $100 a month in, $1,200 a year. I can add that up. But each year, that investment, that mutual fund, that bond fund, that whatever it is, it may have dividends. It may have a capital gain distribution. And I never even see it. It just happens. And they reinvest that income. They reinvest that capital gain distribution. Well, that reinvested, that distribution shows up on my tax return. Even if it doesn't show up on my bank account, it just automatically gets reinvested. But that taxable event adds to my basis over time. Mm-hmm. So I may, you know, I've seen this unfortunately many, many times where somebody buys a mutual fund, you know, 15 years ago for $10,000, and last year they sold it for $25,000. And they look at it and they say, well, my basis is 10. Well, no, because every year, that was a high dividend paying mutual fund or whatever. Every year it had a, you know, a distribution that was reinvested. You may actually have a loss, who knows? You have to be able to keep track of basis. Now, luckily, for anybody that's bought an investment in the last couple of years, the brokerage company, the mutual fund company, the area, the person that you buy it through, the custodian, they are required to keep track of your basis. So it's no longer on us individually. This is why years ago, if you ever listened to a rebroadcast of the show from the 80s or early 2000s, we did not really favor dividend reinvestment plans because it was impossible almost to keep track of the basis.
Because once you start adding to it, then you add to the basis a little bit.
Your basis is just impossible to keep track of.
Yeah.
Now, the brokerage company has to keep track of it.
That's only within the last probably 7 or 8 years that they've been doing it.
So now we don't have a big problem with them. We like it because somebody else is keeping track of the basis.
Exactly. And we'll make clear, and we'll take a couple of calls, we'll make clear in just a little while the fact that, say, on a property, your house, let's say, for example, what you owe on the property has nothing to do with the particular, with the actual basis, all right? Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number. Let's get back to the phone lines. We have two lines open, 877-PLANNER. Rose is first up this hour, Palm City, Florida. Hi, Rose, thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My question is regarding annuities. I tuned in earlier and caught the tail end of your saying you never saw a good time for a variable annuity. Now,
for pure growth. There's reasons to have a variable annuity. It's just not for the long-term growth aspect of it.
Okay, so what is a good annuity to have? Is there any type of annuity that you would recommend?
Sure.
If so, what?
Well, let's talk about you. Let's find out whether I would recommend one for you. What are you trying to accomplish? And we'll see whether or not you should or should not have a variable annuity or any kind of annuity for that matter. How old are you, Rose?
I'm 59.
Okay.
And my husband is 62.
And you have an investment portfolio, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Now, do you have personal money or IRA money or both?
Both.
Okay. Why do you think that you would want a variable annuity, or where do you think it might fit? What have you been told?
Well, I've been told that it's a good way to get income once we retire,
okay,
to get a monthly income.
And it can be. So when you retire, will you have pensions?
No, Social Security.
And your Social Security, when you turn both of them on, how much is that going to total up to?
I'm hoping about $1,800 a month.
Okay. Is that combined between the two of you or just yours?
Yeah.
Okay. So
that'll be the two of us, and that's going to be net.
Okay.
Like figuring after Medicare and that kind of thing.
Okay. And looking at your expenses, how much do you need every month, every year, just to be able to survive? I mean, you wake up in the morning, you've got expenses, you've got insurance, you've got gas, electric, you got food. Yeah, how much do you need per month to be able to retire just on that stuff?
A minimum of $4,000 a month.
Okay, then you are a candidate for having more what we would call either direct income or annuitized income. And so we would be, depending upon the size of your portfolio, looking for adding this guaranteed type income that an annuity would be able to potentially provide. And I happen to like the variable annuity with the guaranteed minimum income benefit rider, guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit rider on it for that purpose, depending upon the size of your portfolio. So this is
okay,
where...
Okay, so there are times when, yeah, I got kind of scared when I heard that comment, and that's why I said I have to try and reach you,
right,
or reach my guy or something, because...
And when I was talking with Sam, I was saying there are reasons to buy a variable annuity for that income rider, but without that income rider, I don't like the variable annuity. So it's all about how we're going to use the product. And I do like the guaranteed income rider on a VA versus the guaranteed income rider on an index annuity. With the index annuity,
we do have the guaranteed rider, so good. That is a good one to have, right?
That may be a great one. I like the variable annuities that do not have investment constraints on the investor. Some variable annuities, the insurance company can invest.
Will they cap you out, you mean?
No, they'll just invest it very conservatively, which means you are no longer in control. The insurance company is in control. And the insurance company controls it for one reason, to protect them, not you.
Yeah. Hey, Rose, I have to take a break. If you have some more questions, please hang on. I'll be happy to talk to you on the other side, just a couple of minutes here. If you want to hang on, if not, that's fine. We're going to talk. Maybe I think we need to talk a little more about these to make sure we clarify, because Rose is concerned and other people maybe as well. All right, 877-PLANNER. We're coming right back. Don't go away. Hey, got our mojos working. We used to start the show with this song years ago. Very cool. All right, 877-PLANNER. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum talking to you. Now we were speaking last hour. About some of these variable annuities, and one of our callers had asked us about variable annuities, and Professor, you had answered that for the reason that the original reason that they were set up, which was really as a tax deferred growth vehicle,
right, long-term growth.
Yes,
you don't touch it. Don't just let it grow.
Right. You had said that you
not in favor of that.
Not in favor, and you can't think of any reason to buy it, which is true. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other reasons to use
right.
variable annuities. For other purposes. Now, Rose in Palm City, you still with us, Rose? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for hanging on. I know you have a couple of other questions, and I'm actually glad you called, because we sort of dashed that comment off. And while we said that there are other reasons for using a variable annuity, we didn't really give the other reasons. We just kept taking calls. So I know you have a few more questions, so I'll let you go ahead and ask those right now.
Okay. Well, my other question was, and I don't know. If this has to do with you, but that commercial that runs regarding Social Security and the changes that are going to happen as of April 31st, does that have to do with the Lucia Group? I mean, is that something that, or can you guys answer, what are those changes? Is it something I need to be concerned about?
Well, I definitely can answer the questions, and it is April 29th. There is no April 31st, so tell me about you. You're 62. Your husband's 62. So the April deadline has nothing to do with him. He doesn't have to do anything because he's not old enough to do anything by the end of April. And you're 59, and so there's two sets of rules, and you're not old enough to do anything about either one of those rules. So let's talk about what you want to do with Social Security, or what you might want to do, and see whether or not that option is still available. Now, whose benefit is larger, yours or your husband's?
My husband's.
And what was his plan for Social Security?
Well, when you say plan, like as far as what age?
Yes.
Yeah, when's he going to take it? That kind of thing.
At least 65 and a half, possibly 70.
Okay.
But at least 65 and a half.
Okay, so what I would consider... Now, we expect at least one of you to live a while, right? 82, 83, 85-ish, more?
Well, we hope so. Right now, I've been disabled because I had a very serious breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
So I don't, we hope so, but we don't know. But that's our hope, of course.
Are you on Social Security disability?
I am.
Okay, assuming you stay on Social Security disability, I don't know if you will or won't, but let's say that you stay on Social Security disability. When your husband turns 66, that's his full retirement age, what he should do is apply for a benefit from your work record. Now, did he turn 62 in the last 2 months, or was he 62 before the end of last year?
The end of last year.
Good. Right answer.
That helps.
Correct answer.
Okay, good.
He has the ability, when he turns full retirement age, assuming he doesn't take any Social Security up until that point, to take half of your benefit from 66 to 70 And that allows his benefit to grow until age 70. And then at age 70, he turns his own benefit on, which has been enhanced and grown by 32% thanks to the delayed retirement credits. So he's going to wait until 66. He applies for half of what you're receiving now, and then he gets at least some money coming in while he continues to wait for his own. The reason he can
I apologize for interrupting, but does that then reduce my benefit?
Nope, not at all. It has no impact on yours.
That's the great thing about it, Rose. It's not like a pension where, you know, there's a finite amount of money. It has no effect whatsoever on yours.
Now, if for some reason you come off of disability, you do not continue the disability benefit all the way until age 66, you probably should apply for your retirement benefit once you get to 62 or later anyway, because then he can still take the same benefit at 66 from 66 to 70. And so it just makes a lot of sense. So you really...
Wow, that's really interesting. And you know what? I have to apologize. I gave you a wrong answer. He turned 61 last year. He will be 62 this year.
Hey, that's the wrong answer. Rose, that's the wrong answer.
Yeah,
so he was born in 54.
Now he can't do what I just laid out so nicely.
So he was born in 54. So
yeah. Okay, well, scratch that last 5 minutes because he can't do what I just told him to do.
So you have to be born before 1954 to be eligible for that.
Yes, ma'am.
You do. So if he missed it by a few months, that sort of
missed it by a little, missed it by a lot. He's too young.
Well, I'm glad that I remembered before we hung up, but...
I'm glad you did, too. Well, it would have worked nicely.
So now he cannot... So now he cannot take a benefit from your work record because his benefit is larger than yours. And when he applies for a benefit, regardless of whether he applies at full retirement age or not, he will first be applying for his own benefit, and... At that point, only if the survivor benefit was more, or the spousal benefit was more, which it won't be, would he be eligible for a spousal benefit.
Which means he gets nothing from you.
So now he has to make a decision. Will you live to be at least age 80, and will he live to be at least 80, or will he live to be at least age 83? If you want to make that bet that he's going to live well into his 80s, you're going to live well into your 80s, then he still waits until 70 to take his benefit. Unfortunately, he doesn't get any money in the meantime.
Okay. I got you. Wow, that sounded so good.
Well, we were going so well, Rose. Oh. We were just sliding along, and all of a sudden, yeah.
And I should have known that couldn't be true, but that's okay. I really appreciate all the info, though. So at this point, we really don't need to do anything.
You can't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they won't let you, unfortunately.
There is absolutely nothing you can do. He can't even apply for his benefit yet. He's not even old enough. And he can't file and suspend because he's not 66. He can't even file because he's not 62. There is nothing you can do at this point.
Right.
So ignore all those emails that you get about, you've got to do something before the end of April.
Yeah, because it doesn't.
Doesn't affect you.
Okay. Well, at least you answered that. And you gave me peace of mind about the annuity.
Yes, your annuity is fine. Yes. You fall into the right category for the variable annuity. Make sure you rest assured on that. Okay, Rose?
Okay, because we have been working with a bucket financial person. And
good.
We've been happy, but then I got worried when I heard that on the radio.
Well,
welcome to call.
You are always welcome to call. We should take blame for that because we didn't make clear. Obviously, we didn't make clear at all. The fact that, you know, there are other uses for it. We mentioned it, but we didn't go into it, so.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I do appreciate all the help that I have gotten from the Lucia Group, so thank you.
You're welcome, Rose, and I thank you for the call. See, this is just the perfect reason why you call the show. If you hear something and it doesn't, you're not sure what you have, is it right for you? Did we say something that we didn't clear up?
And there are assets that have specific reasons to have them and specific reasons not to have them. Which reasons are yours? Should you or should you not?
Right. I'll go back to the tool analogy once again. And this works very well. For those of you that don't know, you know, you have a hammer, it works beautifully for pounding nails in and maybe for taking nails out or for hitting your thumb. But if you got to dig a hole, I wouldn't use a hammer. All right, doesn't mean they're bad, just means that it's not the right job for you. Okay, the right tool. All right, coming back with more. 877-PLANNER, emails, phone calls, lines open. You give us a call. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Friday for Plum.
get the weekend started.
There you go. There you go. I got a weekend coming up, at least where we are live right now, and I hope you have the same. I should mention, too, now next week, for a couple of days, Brain Trust is going to be traveling. So we will not be live for a couple of days, Monday and Tuesday, at the Brain Trust. And you've got a workshop. I got to mention this, too, so I'll do this here. We got a workshop coming up a week from tomorrow. Lucia Capital Group 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. That's happening. The next one is a week from tomorrow. It's Houston, Texas, April 9th. So the Brain Trust will be walking to Houston. So we need a couple of days of travel time. No, I'm kidding. But we will be there in Houston April 9th and then Santa Clara, California on April 30th. So if you want to join the Brain Trust live in Houston, meet them, meet Professor Plum, meet Terry Keyes, meet all the local advisors, and get your questions answered, all of them. Whatever you ask, they'll answer. You can sign up at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. It's all free, and you just tell us how many people are showing up. We'll tell you where it is and all that stuff, and you show up. And as I said, learn all about retirement income strategies. So that is coming up then. But next Monday and Tuesday is a couple of travel days, so we won't be live those days. We'll be back live Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday is another travel day. But you're going to hear some really good shows, some really good segments from past shows. So just wanted to kind of throw that in. If you hear something that you thought, hey, maybe I've heard this before. Okay, okay. And again, the Social Security, we were just talking with Rose in Palm City, Florida. She was asking about these changes to Social Security. And as much as we talk about those, we understand that it's still confusing no matter what. And you need to know, do any of these changes, have they affected us? Well, Professor Plum has put together with some folks a free guide.
A little direction on the top.
Well, of course, yes. A free guide. It's on the big changes to Social Security. You can download it. You can go to our Facebook page. If you're at Facebook, just search Wealth Ed, WEALTH, Wealth Ed, and you'll see a link at the very top. You click on that, and it'll download for you. It's all free, of course, like everything else we do, virtually. Or if you're on our website, there's a Facebook link near the top of the page. Go there. You can click on that. That'll take you to our page. It's just 5-6 pages of a guide, and it'll tell you who this particular law affects, who it doesn't affect, et cetera, et cetera. So visit it.
Can you imagine how busy
I've talked enough.
The Social Security offices are going to be the last week of April?
Well, you know, I've heard.
Imagine trying to call them.
Oh, I know it. I know it. And you know what? I've heard people say May 1st. You know, do this by May 1st. I've heard, you know, April 1st. It's
not April 1st.
It's not April 1st. It's April 29th.
The 29th is a Friday. They're closed Saturday, so you can't do it on the 30th.
Right.
And it really doesn't affect that many people, but if it affects you, don't wait until the 28th, 29th to do it.
Indeed. Don't
do it now, because
yes,
that Social Security office is going to be packed.
And try and get through on the phones and all that.
Oh, it's going to be impossible to get through on the phones.
Yeah, I'm guessing. That's our guess. Okay, 877-PLANNER. We got some lines open finally, so if you want to give us a call, 877-752-6637. I want to get some emails here because we've just sort of getting these stacked up. Paul in Queen Creek, Arizona. Speaking of which, by the way, Paul says, okay, so the file and suspend ends at the end of April. I'm 69. I've been waiting to start my Social Security at age 70. My spouse will be 66 in September this year. I'm the larger wage earner, so if I file and suspend in April, will my Social Security continue to grow until I reach 70 next year? In September, then...
Yes.
Okay, the answer is yes. In September, then, can my wife file a spousal benefit, and would her benefit be half of my age 66 number?
Okay, Paul, you are one of the actually fairly small group of people who needs to get down and do it right now. File and suspend your benefit now. Today, whatever, as soon as possible, because you want to get there and do it before the end of April. Because you do have the ability. If you file today and then immediately suspend it, your benefit will continue to grow till 70. So for you, that side of it is going to be just like not filing. your benefit will continue to grow until 70. However, if you file today and suspend before April 29th, if you file today and suspend before April 29th, and you can do this because you're at least full retirement age, when your wife reaches her full retirement age in September, she can start taking a restricted application, meaning she's not applying for her own, she's only applying for half of your benefit. Now, the benefit she will be eligible for is 50% of your full retirement age benefit, not half of the benefit that you suspended, not half of the benefit that you ultimately will receive. It's half of the benefit that you had earned at your full retirement age. So they'll look at your age 66 benefit. She gets 50% of that number. If you do not suspend, she will not be able to get that benefit until you actually take your benefit at age 70, which is several months later. So you would be giving up, or actually your wife would be giving up, that benefit that she could have been receiving from September until you turn 70 sometime next year. So to get that extra dollar amount coming in for those several months, file and suspend now. Because if you do it after April, she will not be able to take a benefit from your work record until you apply.
Mm-hmm. And what it does is, even if you decide not to do it for whatever reason, even if you, I don't mean to file and suspend, even if you decide not to have your wife, you know, do a benefit or whatever, if circumstances change, at least you've done it. At least you've got the possibility to do it, because you lose that once it hits April 30th.
Right. Really. So, I mean, I can't see any downside on this. The only downside would be is if she should not wait. Now, the reason you were doing it this way is because she wants to wait until 70 as well for her own benefit. She wants to take half of yours, and that makes a lot of sense if you guys are going to live reasonable life expectancies. But if for some reason you changed your mind, just go ahead and file and suspend.
There you go. Just do it. There you go. There's your answer. Joe, Scottsdale, Arizona, 877-PLANNER, by the way. Hi, Joe. How can we help you today?
Hey, guys. I wanted to pick up where you left off, Rick, regarding variable annuities.
Yes.
If I read you right, you're saying that the income rider has a lot of strength in terms of the variable annuity. Is that pretty much what you're saying?
Well, the income rider that's on a variable annuity and the income rider that's on an index annuity are very similar. They use an income base that usually starts off with the amount of money you put into it, and then it rolls up at some predetermined rate to determine what kind of a payout that they will make you for the rest of your life. And now, let's be sure that understand that the money that's coming out of it in the early years is coming out of your cash value. Whether it's a variable annuity or an index annuity, it's coming out of your cash value. And
right.
So over time, you're going to draw that cash value down. And then if the cash value goes to zero, then the insurance company says, okay, we promised, and we're going to live up to our promise and write you a check for X amount of dollars, whatever that income that they promised was, for the rest of your life.
Now, let me ask you this. Is there a death benefit involved? And also, to really win at that, do you have to live to be a certain age, or how does that actually shake out?
Well, longevity does play an effect. If you don't have longevity, then this isn't a very good tool for you. But if you or your spouse has longevity and you want that guaranteed income source, this makes a lot of sense. Now, going back to the original question, the reason I like the variable annuity more so than the index annuity, assuming
with
that
the rider,
we're talking about the one with the riders. Assuming that the income is the same amount of income, 5% at 65 of the income base, either way, whatever the number is, at least the variable annuity has a chance. Because what happens if the market does very well, even after the nasty fees that are in a variable annuity? A year like 2013, 2014, my cash value, it may have grown and exceeded my income base. And if it grows and exceeds the income base at the contract anniversary, or depending on when they do this, it'll reset my income base at a higher number, which means I get a higher income for the rest of my life.
Okay,
an index annuity, that will never happen.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so obviously you recognize the fact that the fees in the variable annuity are very high.
Oh, yeah.
It really doesn't threaten what your strategy in terms of what you're saying.
No, because I'm buying it for the income first. So I'm going to buy the one that gives me the best income guarantee. But assuming I've got two of them that give me similar income guarantees, now I'm going to buy the one that, even if it's not a good chance, at least there is a chance that I could get a better income. Where with the index annuity chassis, I'm never getting a better income, because the cash value will never grow faster than the distribution or the roll-up rate. That's just, it's a given issue.
Okay. Okay, so in other words, if you were going to use either a fixed index annuity or a variable annuity for income purposes only, I read you right if I say that the variable annuity is better?
In my opinion, I like it more. Now, there are some people that even though the income is guaranteed for life, they hate seeing the cash value drop significantly. They'd much rather see a slow drop to their their cash value than a rapid drop, which can happen with the variable. So for them, just from an emotional standpoint, the income's the same either way. The income and the index annuity works better for them from the emotional side that they don't, even though they know the income's guaranteed, they don't like seeing those swings on the side, and they're willing to give up the upside potential to not see that negative number on the cash value.
Yeah, sometimes the psychological aspect trumps everything, which, you know, that's just the way it is. Joe, I got to take a break, so if you have any other questions, please feel free to hold on. We'll talk to you more about it on the other side. We do need to clarify some of these things. I'm glad we brought it up. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number. PLANNER. Very little time, just a couple of lines open. Johnny D., Professor Rick Plum. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We're running short on time. 877-PLANNER. If you want to try to get on board, we will talk to you and answer your money questions. Also, still try to get to a couple more emails here, but we do take phone calls first on this show. So we're going to get right back to it. Let's move along next to Stanley in Las Vegas. Hi, Stanley.
How you doing, guys?
Doing great. What's up?
I have a tax question.
All right.
I pay my federal income tax. I pay withholding tax here in Nevada. I also pay withholding tax in California. Why is that?
Are you working in California?
No, I work here. I live here in Nevada, and I work in Nevada. But of course, the company is in California.
Okay. But none of the work is being done in California?
No.
The office is in Vegas. Then you can refill out your W-4, W-9, and say, don't withhold anything for state. Because now you have to file a California state return to get your money back.
Really? So what is, let's see, I also pay a thing called Federal 08SD, /EE, what's that?
Old Age Survivor.
OASDI is FICA. That's your Social Security tax.
And I pay that in California and pay that here too.
You pay that everywhere. If you're working in these states, you're paying FICA, unless you are a municipal employee that's exempt from it, or a California teacher, or, you know, there's several states where they teachers don't pay into
it. They take it out in both states.
They take it out in every state until your combined wages exceed more than $118,500.
Oh, please. I don't make that much.
Yeah. Now, have you been working? Is this new? Or was this just last year where you just started, Stanley, working?
2002.
Have they been withholding it since 2002?
Yeah. I pay on my tax thing, I pay 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different things.
Yeah, you should have federal withholding, OASDI. There's probably a disability insurance in there, a Medicare.
I pay that one.
And then in California, you shouldn't be paying. So you may want to talk with...
I'm paying both.
You may want to talk with a tax preparer about why it's there and whether you can get it back. Now, you may, if you're not supposed to be paying it, if what you're saying is true and you don't owe it, then you may be able to go back 3 years and amend your returns. Do this now, because you lose the ability to amend the 2012 return in about 2 weeks. So do this now.
I better get on it then.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for the question. Maybe that answered my question.
Yeah, and let us know how it comes out, Stanley, if you would, because I'm interested.
Be more than happy to.
Okay, great. Thank you, Stanley. Take care.
There's several types of withholding on our checks, and you know, obviously federal income tax withholding is going to be one. So he was looking, and he said there's like 5 lines of withholdings, and there will be at least 3-4 lines on everybody's return, even if they live in a state that doesn't have a state income tax. You've got your Medicare, your Social Security, and your federal withholding, and in many cases there's some type of a state disability insurance that's being withheld. But if he's working in Nevada, lives in Nevada, the fact that the company is domiciled in another state shouldn't have any issue with that. He is working in an office. Now, if he was traveling to California to work, yeah, he owes California income tax on the work that he does in California. If his even if he was working in Nevada, but he lived in California, California wants their pound of salt in that. But he doesn't have either of those issues.
I can't figure out why. I mean, the company is headquartered, I guess, in California.
Yeah.
So maybe all of their payroll, whoever they run it through, is just taking out state. Maybe he's one of the few that doesn't work, happen to work in California.
And, and we forgot to ask him whether he was working for this company before he moved to Nevada. So maybe he was working for him back in the day in California, and he moved to Nevada. I don't know. I'm making it
up. I thought I kind of asked him that.
He said he's been working there, or he's been doing this since 2002. But I don't know whether it's been happening since 2002 because that's when he moved to Nevada or when he got the job.
Well, my question was, where you work... did this just start last year where you were in Nevada working? And he said no.
He's been doing it since 2002.
So I suspect he's been in Nevada since 2002. But I mean,
I don't know. It seems something's fishy here, and I don't know why. Because usually this doesn't happen.
All right. Thank you for the call, Stanley. Got time for one more email. James in Henderson, Nevada. I currently have a New York State police pension and am now earning a second pension with Nevada PERS, Public Employee Retirement System. I've paid 30 years into Social Security. My wife has paid into Social Security as well. How are our Social Security benefits affected because of the two pensions?
Well, your wife does not have a pension from work not covered by Social Security. And so the issue is, how is your Social Security going to be affected? Now, you also say that you've paid into Social Security for at least 30 years. 30 years is a potential magic number. But as the 30 years have to be what they call substantial earning years. If you've paid into Social Security based on a substantial earning in each of those 30 years, then there will be no impact to your Social Security due to these pensions. If you do not have 30 years of substantial earnings, and I think the Nevada PERS, Public Employee Retirement System, does not pay into Social Security. So in that employment, you're going to have an issue with your Social Security benefit. How do you know if it's substantial? Well, there's a list of substantial earnings on the Social Security website. But basically in 2015 and 16, it's right around $22,000 of earnings that you would pay FICA tax on to qualify as substantial earnings in those 2 years. Now, obviously some of those 30 years are from many years ago. In 1986, substantial earnings were about $7,500. So what you would want to do is take a look at your earnings history from your Social Security, you know, benefit statement, and match it up to the substantial earnings page and count them off. Do I have 30 years of substantial earnings? If so, no impact from the windfall elimination provision. And so you don't have to worry about your Social Security being reduced. Now, if you don't have 30 years, that is going to have somewhat of an impact. If you've got 29, it's a fairly small impact. If you've got less than 20, you get full brunt of the storm, so to speak, the full impact. So there's a couple ways to look at this, and it gets a little detailed. If you've got the 30 years, that's the easiest. If you've got 30 years of substantial, don't worry about it.
Yeah, and pensions do affect Social Security, in case you're wondering.
Pensions from work where you did not pay into Social Security can affect your Social Security that you earned through other employment or through other individuals' work records.
Yes, once you're receiving a pension. Now, if you happen to take Social Security at age 62 and you had a pension
that
and
didn't
it doesn't
start
kick in
65?
Until 65 or whatever, you're okay for at least 3 years.
Yeah, the windfall elimination does not, and the government pension offset does not take effect until you're actually receiving the Social Security benefit.
Exactly, and that's the owner of the pension, too. If you're a spouse who's getting the pension, that's a whole different story. Okay, out of time, whole lot more we didn't get to, but if you need the Brain Trust to ask us any questions at all about anything that you hear on this program or whatever questions you have, you can talk to the professor or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Their phone number off the air, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Montana, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.